Thank you and good night.
Thank you. Well, thank you for coming to the DragonCon Webcomics Forum. We appreciate you coming by on the first night of the con. Hope you're having a good time. Thought we'd talk about not just where webcomics have been, but webcomics are going. Things that we're doing with our webcomics, new things that we haven't tried before, maybe, or branching out. So let's everyone introduce themselves.
I guess we're starting with you, Jenny. Why not?
My name's Jenny Breeden. I do a webcomic called The Devil's Panties. It's not actually satanic porn, sorry. That's sold separately. And I've been doing my comics since 2001, and I post every day about conventions and life and the universe and everything.
Yay! I'm Comfort.
And I am Adam, and we are the husband and wife Action Faction, responsible for a pair of self-published comic series, The Uniques and Rainbow in the Dark.
We also did a big how-to book for Random House called The Complete Guide to Self-Publishing Comics.
Yes. The only thing that we have not self-published is the book about self-publishing.
There's a market for that.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm Ben Fisher. Oh, hi. Hi, I'll say we're back here. So most of what I do is in the print medium. I write for Dynamite and IDW and Oni and Lionforge, a bunch of different publishers. I've done some work for Webtoons. I've got a new series coming out with Webtoons. It'll be announced here pretty soon. And have done some webcomic works for different horror franchises like Chud, if you know Chud, and a few things like that. So.
And I'm Bill Holbrook. I do Kevin and Kel since 1995, daily. I believe it's the longest running web comic. At least I think that everyone who came before me has now been on hiatus for a while. But yeah, let's talk about what we're doing with our web comics and new things that we haven't tried before. Go ahead. Who wants to start?
He's like, It just occurring to me like last week that I know nothing. I don't know what's going on webcomics. I don't know what the latest things are. I was on a panel, don't do the math, many years ago with Sluggy Freelance, and somebody asked, what webcomics do you read? And we all said, each other's. And then Sluggy was the only one with the balls to go, I don't have time to read any webcomics. And so it's this concept that, you know, you are kind of keeping your head down and getting your own stuff cranked out, that you rarely come up for air and look around. Or at least I don't know if I'm speaking for everyone else. And so yeah, doing something new.
You do a lot on social media.
Yeah, I actually realized every month for my patrons, I send them high resolutions of the five best comics, and to figure out what the five best comics are, I go to all of my social media that I post on and get all of that information. And I found that if I post my comic on my Facebook personal page, the likes on my comic book page, instead of getting like 10 likes, I'll get 190 likes. And so it's this very bizarre, I'm preaching to the choir. These are my same fans that are following me on Facebook and reading the website, but somehow that's a very different, they're interacting with it differently. And so I'm posting every morning, I grab my phone and I copy the link from my website and I post it on my Facebook page. And then I'll copy the comic from the website and I'll post it on Instagram. And I've started taking hashtags and collecting them in notebook and then copy and pasting all of the webcomics, comic strip, comic strips, comics. Yep. So that's the new thing that I've been doing with webcomics is trying to just spam social media.
Well, that's synergy.
Yeah.
Yep. That's basically what we've had to do is... God loves social media, but it is the bane of our existence.
It really is.
Because it demands, like, it's the beast that's never sated. But yet, in doing webcomics these days, it's not like, Oh, well, I put my comic out on my website, and people have found it, and they like it, and they find it through these other things.
Done.
No. It's everywhere, constantly. Like, somebody sent us a thing, like, how often we should be posting for social media. They were like, Instagram, five times a day.
This is somebody we met who does social media professionally.
And like, we made friends with them. They're like, oh, I'll just send you
I'll send you the stuff that I send to companies to let them know.
And so Instagram, five times a day. You need to do Facebook this many times. You need to do all this
like
other kind of stuff.
Seven or eight tweets a day. Like,
this is a full-time job unto itself. So the thing I think we've realized is you almost have to be like a studio almost to become, like, to start breaking from the crowd. Now, that's not how you start, obviously. But that's the kind of thing that you eventually work towards. So what we've been doing this year is we've been messing around with the joys of webtoons, and that's fascinating. And then the other thing we're doing is we're literally creating a studio right now where we, you know, do our own comics, but then we're also doing work for other people as well. Mm-hmm. So we have 35 people that work under us.
Yeah, I avoid Facebook because it terrifies me, but Twitter and Instagram, same. I spam it even when I don't want to spam it. I just hashtag the heck out of it. As far as the new, as I sort of mentioned before, Webtoon is a platform that I've been writing for a lot recently, and I think it sounds like you guys are. But it, from a writing perspective, it's a very different, at least for me, it's
a very different process.
Are you all familiar with Webtoon? So the format being so different than you would typically, at least I would typically expect to see a web comic.
The expectations too of the audience are
it is, and it's fun though, right? Because every panel is a reveal, so you get this kind of fun where I can just have as many page, like literal page reveals as I want. But it's a learning curve. It definitely is.
And yet there's no hierarchy.
Right.
Every panel's a reveal, but you can't make any panel special.
Right.
You can't build up to anything because they're all the same. It's two steps forward, one step back.
Well, I've tried something in the past year. It's monthly animations. I found out when I upgraded my Adobe suite that I got this new thing called Character Animator. And I found out that you can actually make an animation single-handedly on your own. So I, every month I have my character, the corporate goth Dethany Dendrobia. She has a 2-minute animation where she's giving advice on the corporate world. And I have a voice actress named Amy Sweeney who works at the Center for Puppetry Arts. She reads the script that I send and she knocks it out of the park every month. She's a brilliant voice actress. And then I set up a puppet of my character that responds to movements and does the automatic mouth movements, and it's literally a animation that looks professional, and it's just me with her voice, and it's amazing. You can see them on YouTube at the Bill Holbrook channel. It's just amazing what they can do with computers these days.
By gum.
Yeah. Well, and YouTube, again, a whole other platform.
It's a whole other thing. Yeah. All of it. It's seriously, guys, it's a lot.
I wanted to draw comics and have somebody send me a paycheck. That's what I wanted. But
yeah, we came in, like, the thing is we all started in this a while ago. And we came in all being like, oh my gosh, you can make comics and get them out to the world, which was really cool. Like, Adam and I, like, our thing was not so much webtoons to start with. What it was is that you could do, like, print-on-demand comics. And so we started, like, selling...
And digital release.
And digital release. And we started, you know, selling digital comics to people online and things to comic shops and, you know, local libraries and conventions and things like that that were never possible because you'd have to print out, like, thousands upon thousands of copies. And we got into this when you could make 10 copies and make it affordable. And it was amazing. But what happened was, as life has changed, there's been all these other demands and all these other monetizing things by giant companies on social media that does make social media a lot more troublesome than it used to be, because you could usually like put your stuff on like Instagram and all your followers used to see it. But now Instagram's like, maybe 5% of your followers can see this, but if you pay this money, a lot more of your followers can see this. So even the things that you've earned, you haven't quite earned unless you've got the money to make sure that people actually are enjoying the thing.
I had somebody today who asked me if my books were on digital, available digitally. Mm-hmm. And so there are people who they want the printed copy. So yes. There is print-on-demand places. I use... Amazon now has a printing company called, it used to be Create Space, and now it's Kindle Direct. Mm-hmm. And you put a book together, upload the PDF, and they, for $2, they send you the book. Mm-hmm. And then it's on Amazon. And then people all over the world can order it, and Amazon will print it and ship it to them. You don't have to do storage. You don't have to do. And so when the lady was like, hey, is your stuff also digital? That's also something that some people would rather have digital, so it's a way that you can upload it onto. I use DriveThru and one other, and I don't remember what the other one is. What do you
Lulu?
Guys use?
Hmm? Lulu?
Lulu's one of them. Like, yeah. So for digital publishing, mm-hmm. is there anybody you guys use?
DriveThru and Comixology?
Comixology, thank you. That's the other one I use. I'm just saying that that's another venue for publication.
But isn't your website already digital?
So, I mean, it's this very bizarre...
it is, how people want to read. You almost have to appease every person and every niche.
Like, this is something...
in a separate app, basically.
And the bonus... Well, it all in one page. And I had some... Way back in the before time, when... before webcomics, and when you had to explain, you go to an anime convention, the anime kids knew what webcomics were, but yes. I went to a comic convention, and they didn't know what a webcomic was. This one guy said, well, how much is the subscription? And I said, no, it's free. And he was like, if it's free, it must not be good. If you didn't get a publisher. And so it's this whole, like, there's people who only do this one thing or that one, so you have to produce it, theoretically, for everybody.
Yeah.
Because there's some people who only check on Instagram, and there's some people who only check on
and
Facebook.
That's the hard... This is something that the smartphone taught us, and the reason that the sharper image no longer exists is because people don't want a bunch of gadgets that do a couple things really well. They want one gadget that does everything. I don't want to have to go to a million sites to read a bunch of comics. I want to go to my one site and get all of them.
That's the Go Comics philosophy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if I'm reading stuff on Webtoon, I don't want to have to check this other site too. Why aren't you just on Webtoon? Or if I'm reading stuff on Comixology, well, I've got my Comixology library and it's all nicely curated and it looks really pretty. And if your stuff isn't on there, it's... It's the dominance of Steam and video games. Like, yeah, I could get it on the Origin store, but everything else I have is on Steam. You know, it's how people are. I don't want to have to do the extra work to go to multiple places.
Which is fine, because I think another thing that is happening is entertainment can feel like a job sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so you as a creator are trying to make it easy enough for people to read your work and love your work in as many venues as possible. Yes. So we're up on Webtoon and we're learning things from Webtoons. And we're like, well, maybe we'll also just take that and put it up on Tapas. And I'll be honest, if it was ever re-released on Webtoon, like if it became one of their official like Webtoon things, I would do things differently. Like I would, one of the things, just even for you guys, because people still like to buy things in a physical format, and frankly, we still make the vast majority of our money through selling, actual printed comics. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that's just what we do. But when we do Webtoons, we do break up all the panels, and we make it a really nice-looking Webtoon, but...
For people who might not follow...
Also true.
Webtoon as a service is designed exclusively for your phone.
You can read it on your desktop, but it looks best on the phone.
It's not made for it. It doesn't scale, it doesn't adjust.
Was it originally Korean? Yes.
It's made by Korean Google,
basically.
And then it's financed by Korean Google.
We design everything for print, because designing for your phone is stupid. because eventually you want it in print. Yeah. And something that works in a phone format might not work in print.
Or guess what? This might change someday.
That's true. Yeah.
This will
and then
change.
It will change inevitably.
Right. We've always had flip phones. What are you talking about?
Exactly.
So you always design for the final stage. And since for us the final stage is print, that's what we build for.
But,
and then we chop up the print version and rearrange it to work on a phone.
Okay, so but here's the cool thing, or like cool, I don't know if that's the word to use, but if I was doing it again, or if it was going to be like re-released again, what I would do and what I'd recommend for you guys to do is make your comics for print, or make it so it can be put into print easily. But also for something like Webtoon, have in your back pocket, do like a bunch of different faces for
just
your character.
Expressing
faces. And make it vague enough that the costumes and stuff aren't necessarily in there, because Webtoon is all about 1,001 reaction
talking
shots,
heads.
Talking heads. And they don't say several sentences, they say one sentence, one sentence, one sentence.
Or
reaction face, one word. So you need to be able to recycle that stuff in. So when you're making something alongside your actual comic, your panel-to-panel thing, put in that back pocket just like whole facial, like, you know, 20 faces that you can keep pulling from. It'll make your life 1,000 times easier, and it'll get that panel count up to what Webtoon generally likes.
But yay! They charge per panel.
The platform prefers that comics have a certain number of panels per chapter, and the audience is used to that. So the audience expects to have a certain amount of
scroll. So we would take what was, you know, 4, 5, 6 pages worth of content and bring it down to 2 pages probably of content, and then space it out with the other faces because that's more the medium right now, at least.
Yeah, I have spent my life trying to get everything down to 3 panels. Through brutal editing, getting an idea down from maybe 10 or 12 panels to 3.
I think the big takeaway that you guys should be having is that everything will keep on changing. That's not a terrible thing. It can be frustrating, but it can
also
change.
Be free.
Yeah. It can be something that you're like, oh, this is fascinating, this is cool. Like, honestly, as frustrating as it was initially to start taking things and putting it into the Webtoon format, we love the interaction of the people on it. That's really fun. It's really invigorating. Like, people are super energized. And it's almost been a thing, too, to, like, teach the audience how to look for story points and how to see character growth and stuff, because some Webtoons do that, but many don't. And so you making something fascinating and interesting and engaging in a different way than what, say, most of the Webtoons can be, helps the audience grow just as you're growing yourself as a creator.
Yeah.
Ta-da.
Sure. Yep. Do we want to open up questions for the audience?
Yes.
Like, do we have like a question box? Usually we have a question box.
Do we have the microphone that we throw around the room?
There it is.
Whoa.
It works.
Found the speaker.
The answer is yes.
Test. Whoa.
Yes, it definitely works.
Yeah. All right. So Scott McCloud wrote Reimagining Comics over a decade ago at this point. I'm assuming most people in the industry read it at that point and was like, he's got some good points, but I don't know if he's actually right about where it's going to go. Obviously, looking back at this point, he had some blind spots. What do you guys feel that he got right, and what do you feel like that he had no way of knowing what was going to happen?
So I went to Savannah College of Art and Design. I majored in comic books in 1998, and we were required to read Dark Knight Returns, Mouse, V for Vendetta, and understand the comics by Scott McCloud, but I didn't know that the next one came out. I didn't read Reimagining, and he did. I think that understanding comics by Scott McCloud is definitely worth checking out. It's still very, very poignant because it's about storytelling and communication, and especially for comics, about when to use a lot of detail and when to use very little detail, and how you're doing emotion, and how, like, he talked about action that happens off panel is so much more intense than action that happens on panel. So I don't know about reinventing, but definitely just some of the basics, going back and looking at how stealing is within the art community. You read other people's stuff and you see how they do it, and then you see if you can apply that to your own stuff, or your own stuff kind of adjusts. There's a fine line between stealing and inspiration.
Sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the pyramid he created with going from very realistic to very stylized, that could be overthinking it, but everything that you just said about his theories being applicable even 20 years later is dead on, because he really did break down comics into ways that we were all doing intuitively without thinking about it. And when I read it, it was like, oh yeah, I do this, but I didn't know I was doing it. But yeah, he's, I mean, it's a seminal work, and it still holds up.
I can speak more directly to your question. I think the two biggest things that he didn't account for were laziness and corporatism. Scott McCloud looked to the future, and he saw a lot more experimentation with the medium than what we actually got. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, the audience is lazy, and they want comics to look like comics. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily want to go to every creator's page and find a totally different kind of reading experience. Mm-hmm. They want it to feel the same all the time.
So there's not a new learning curve.
Yes, they want the comfort of always understanding what I'm looking at. So the experimentation never really took off the way he wanted it to.
The example he had was that one huge...
The infinite scroll.
Yeah.
The infinite scroll. He also liked the infinite inward. I know he did a whole strip where every panel was within the next panel, so you're always zooming into something new.
So the best example that was successful towards that would probably have been Homestuck. Because of every page with text, and then the video game section.
Mm-hmm. Homestuck is probably the most successful comic experiment ever made.
Yeah.
But there is only one Homestuck.
Yeah. No one followed it.
Yeah. The other thing, so first off, we as a culture, both the creators and the audience, never really got into experimentation with the medium the way he had hoped. The other thing is how much corporatization controls the medium. Even if we wanted to be very experimental, at the end of the day, people read comics on platforms, and we don't control the platforms. The platforms are controlled by whoever's got the money. Webtoon looks like how Webtoon's going to look. Tapas looks like how Tapas is going to look. Comixology looks how... We don't get to say. We don't get to tell Comixology how to slice up our panels for presentation to the audience. They choose how it's done. Mm-hmm. So we don't have the freedom as creators to just make these things into any... We can't experiment, even if we wanted to, because we need an audience for the book, and the audience goes to the platform. They don't come to us.
He foresaw, like, micropayments.
Yeah.
But he didn't foresee Patreon.
No.
Yep. Yeah.
And
He actually tried to get micropayments with a work he did. I think it was called The Right Number, which you were supposed to access by contributing like 5 cents for every click. It just never caught on.
Yeah. Right. Well, the thing is, it's complicated. Right. It asks the audience to have to do more. And anytime you ask the audience to do more, you're going to be disappointed.
All right, other question.
Does this work? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So regarding like advertising, when it comes to updates, if you're doing like weekly updates or something with a webcomic, normally it's just like what I do is a lot of what everyone at default is like, you do like a snippet and kind of take it and throw it on Twitter or throw it elsewhere and stuff. But it's like some people also just post the whole thing, and you kind of feel like, if I already have it, why don't I? Do you guys find better interaction just if you have the ability and energy to be posting it on all of your platforms, that better? Or do you find it better to have like preview, and does that draw more people?
I post the whole thing. I post the whole thing on Twitter and Instagram, and then when I do the link, I just copy the link into copy the link into Twitter and Facebook, and it does the little preview that leads back. I had somebody complain on Instagram because I had to cut it up so that it all fit. And he was like, I want the whole thing there so I can scroll through and see it. So I think that as far as advertising, it really comes down to you get that audience, and then when you have that thing to sell, you have that audience there. So do you guys cut it up?
Because of the length of our chapters, we don't have the choice to just put the whole thing on Twitter.
Right. Again, I think right now, at least, Webtoons is like, we'd like 50 to 60 panels per
chapter. And when we release through Comixology or Drive-Thru, we're releasing full chapters at a time, as opposed to smaller strips. So I can say that the immediate upside of posting the whole thing everywhere is it's easier to build audiences per platform and social media. It's easier to get people on Twitter to follow you, like you, retweet you, if it's a full thing, because they're sharing the full thing. And anytime you ask somebody to click away in order to engage, you're going to lose at a minimum 25% of your people. You know, the best you can usually hope for realistically is like 10% of the people that see a button will click the button.
Yep.
So posting the whole thing is immediate, and it's easier to build on those platforms. However, if you're trying to drive traffic somewhere, if being big on Instagram does nothing for you, you need them to be somewhere else, you have to find ways to get the snippets to work.
The question is, what do you want?
Yeah, what
and
works
then based
for you?
On what you want, and that's going to require you to do a lot of research, and what do you do, what are others doing, what's working for other people.
What's your book? Yeah. Because your comic is going to determine a lot, like length, size, how big are the chapters, how many panels on average. That's going to change a lot about how you're trying to engage with your audience and how you want them to engage with you.
Frankly, in a lot of ways too, you kind of just want people to, if you're trying to make money, you need to get people onto your Patreon. You need to have stuff to sell at conventions. You need to have stuff where people can, you can either sell to libraries or you can, you know, sell to people directly through Amazon or whatever, because there does need to be an avenue for you to eventually monetize this, because the idea is that we're not just making fun stories that we put out into the ether, but that we're making a living on this and we can keep on doing it because this is where our income comes from.
And I'll say, to sort of underscore that point too, I think snippets relative. If we're talking about a three panel sort of traditional quote unquote web comic, snippets just the one panel. I tend to do the longer form as well. Snippet for me is a full chapter. But I imagine everyone here would agree the most important part, whether it's snippet or whatever, is the consistency. I mean, that's what's really, of course, going to drive the traffic, is to make sure that whatever it is, weekly, bi-weekly, daily, whatever it happens to be, that whatever if you're doing it by snippets, that you're doing those, you're updating whatever the next snippet is.
You're letting people know, hey, this is up.
Yeah.
Hey, this is up.
It can be worth posting about it a couple times a day, too, to hit different people at different
timings.
Yeah,
You prioritize it. Because for Facebook, I have a Devil's Panties Facebook page that posts the comic there every day. And then for my personal Facebook page, I will post a link. I'll go to the Facebook Devil's Panties page and to the Devil's Panties page, and I'll look at the numbers, and I'll see which ones were good, which ones are popular, and then I'll take that comic and I'll post it on Instagram, maybe every other day or something. Instagram, I don't take the time to go and take the comic and post it there every day, but I will look at the other platforms and see what's popular. It's a vital tool to see. I mean, I don't know if in the movie Basquiat, there's a scene where David Bowie is playing Andy Warhol, thank you. And there's a scene where he goes,
I like this is the hair.
I don't even know what's good anymore. I have no idea what's good. My own stuff. I have no idea what's funny and what's not. I'll post something that I think is brilliant and it will bomb like a lead balloon. And I'll do something that is a throwaway. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I just have something up. This is cringeworthy and whatever. And I'll post it and it'll go nuts. It'll have, you know, people will love it. And I'm like, I have no idea. And so I'll use social media to see what was good, what ones worked, what ones didn't. And I'll compile those and use those for, I'll be like, oh, I need a big push and remind everybody I'm here. I'm going to post that one comic that I did that everybody loved 3 months ago, and I'll just post that everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that gets a bigger reaction and a share based on what time you post. That's right. A whole other science.
Yeah. Yeah, I also do what you do, is take my individual strips, post them on Facebook and Twitter with a link. Advertising isn't that much of a revenue stream for me. So it isn't that I'm driving for advertising. I get most of my Kevin and Kel income through the Kevin and Kel patron program, which predates Patreon. I started it in 2001. That's what has essentially been sustaining the strip for all this time, is just at, I just went to my readers and says, advertising has collapsed. This was the first web.
The first round.
The first collapse. I said, if the strip is going to continue, it has to be, it's on you guys. And they stepped up and they've supported me ever since.
What do you provide them? You just say, hey, can you give me some money, please? And sure.
Every October, I come back and say, new patron program. I have a bunch of goodies, a Kevin and Kel print, some parody. Like this year, it was the Kevin and Kel parody of Zootopia. You can get a con badge with your furry caricature. You know, people send me a picture of themselves, and I draw them of the species of their choice. And the goodies go all the way up to actually appearing in the strip and interacting with the characters. And I have about 12 of them who do that.
And it's what you're willing to do.
All right. Another question.
Hello.
Hey.
I hear one of the best things for people who want to get their art out in social media is to interact with the community. Mm-hmm. But despite putting your work out there consistently and trying to talk or comment on their art, if you don't really receive recognition for your art, what do you think is the best way to move on from that?
I would say and this is for everybody. Oh man, Adam and I like to teach one class each a semester, not because it makes much money, because adjunct teaching does not, but because we, fellow adjunct teachers, you know.
It's the highest educated, lowest paid job in the country.
So we like doing this every semester if we can, if we've got the time. And boy howdy, are our students increasingly getting stressed out because of the demands of social media? And the perceptions, if you don't have 10,000 followers by the time that you're 24, you're done forever. And I'm like, what? That's what we think now? No wonder you're freaking out. It's okay to not be the most popular thing. You know why? Because this stuff takes time. And guess what? Things change all the time too, and that's okay. You just gotta roll with the punches. You work on getting better for you right now. You don't have to please anybody else just yet.
As long as you're posting regular, whether you can get something up every day or you're getting something up every couple days, as long as it's steady and regular and people can count on it. Share sketches of things in progress so people can see what you're working on in between the things that are big releases. As long as you're doing it, you just give it time. You just keep going, and it's going to be all right. And when Instagram inevitably crashes under the weight of Facebook's nonsense, something else is going to come along, and everybody's going to be over there. You know, it's we're all frogs, and the lily pads keep sinking. You've got
to
find a new
MySpace
one to jump to.
We're just going
to
bring it back.
Someday we're just going to bring it back to MySpace.
Live journal, come back. Yeah.
But that's the thing is, you keep,
all of our accounts still active.
You keep practicing, and you keep looking for who your audience might be. So you're always researching. Mm-hmm. You're always adding to that giant pool of knowledge.
And maybe the audience for the work you're producing isn't on Instagram, and you need to go somewhere else.
I had somebody at a convention don't do the math, how many years ago it was, okay. who said, who's your audience? Who's your target audience? And I was like, and that day at Baltimore Comic Con, I had a woman with a child come up and say, this comic reminds me of me and my friends. I had a motorcycle biker guy with a beard come up and go, man, this I love this thing. It reminds me of my niece and you just all my friends. And I had a football player looking dude, just blonde baseball cap, come up and he goes, I really like your comic. Me and everybody in my dance troupe thinks it's really nice. I'm like, I have no target audience. I have no freaking clue. And so what the how do you get people to read your stuff and how do you get that social media presence? I used to tell people the first year you do a webcomic, you realize this is hard. I'm drawing something on a regular basis, be it once a week or once a month or, you know, once a day. This is hard keeping that up. And then they come back to me the 2 years later and they go, this is hard and I'm not getting paid. And yeah, that's 2 years. So how long has Instagram been around?
Longer than it should.
it takes you longer than Instagram has existed to really build up followings. That it really takes perseverance. And do not listen. Do not listen. There's going to be trolls.
Yes. The people who shoot to the top really fast and get super successful overnight are like firecrackers. They're really impressive to look at.
Yeah.
Really, well, most of them behind the scenes.
Everybody who's that, oh, he came out of nowhere. No, he's been around forever.
Yeah. Exactly. We always say, like, if somebody, like...
Discovered.
Exactly. If somebody makes Rainbow in the Dark, like, into the next big thing on Netflix, they'll be like, where did these people come from? And I'll be like, we've totally been doing this full time for 10 years. That's what it takes. That instant gratification, the things that people talk about, I'm going to swear now, it's usually bullshit. And when people talk about, oh, I'm just a writer and it just happens and I just make things and I'm fucking magic, I'll be like, fucking bullshit too. Shut the fuck up. Because what you're doing is making other people feel bad about themselves because they're not magic. This job isn't magic, your work isn't magic, and anybody who tries to tell you that and put you down because you just don't have it is a liar.
Talent.
Every professional I've seen will look at some other professional and go, I suck. They're amazing. Yeah. My mother does Art in Place in Virginia, and she hosts monumental sculptors who are just world-renowned, and she has them sleep on her couch in the house, and they'll sit around the dinner table talking about how do we make it. They're all old guys. They're like, how do we succeed? All these young guys are succeeding. And she comes to Portland to visit me, and we go through a museum, and she looks over at this piece of art in the museum, and she goes, that motherfucker was bitching in my kitchen about how he hasn't made it. He's in a goddamn museum. What the hell is he talking about? So even the people that you're idolizing at the top are still going, how do I get famous? How do I do it?
Yes, I actually have a question. I do a different kind of comics. I actually work with 3D art. Mm-hmm. And I asked a question is, how do you get your storyboard? Do you do a storyboard before you do all your stuff, or do you do it piecemeal? I do writing, and when I write my stuff up, I always find, well, how am I going to put all of this into a comic format? And it's really frustrating at that point. So how do you guys handle that?
First of all, it depends on how long your comic is and stuff. Like, for the writing process, it's really important to not just write something and be like, now I'm going to figure out how to draw this. Like, when we write things, we're always thinking of the layout and the page count and all of that stuff in mind.
Yeah, we write full scripts, full panel descriptions, every panel. We're the ones drawing it. We draw our own stuff, but we do not trust ourselves to be able to look at the script when it's done and suddenly spontaneously know how it should look.
So we're always breaking it down. So when we're doing, say, a full issue, you know, that's 22-ish pages, and we say, okay, this is generally what's going to happen in the issue, this is the theme, all that kind of stuff, and then we break it down and we say, this scene is this many pages, and that scene is that many pages, and this scene is that many pages. Okay, cool, that's the right amount of pages. then we say, okay, how many panels and stuff per page? And we say, what happens on every panel? And not till that point, when that is done and we both agree on it, that is when we actually start writing in the full descriptions and the dialogue. Mm-hmm. You have to make a process, because if you don't, you wind up hitting these walls.
Mm-hmm. That's the hardest step in the process for me, by the way, going from script, which is just something I've scribbled out on a legal pad, to having it as a pencil sketch, and all its flaws are just laid out. As I gotta fix this. How do I fix this? Do I break these two panels apart? Do I extend this? All the problems are solving is in that step.
You have another question?
I think maybe from you guys a slightly different perspective. I don't draw at all. I'm horrendously bad at it. So in my, it's very similar, it's the exact same setup in terms of page light, everything else, but I go a very much a step of sketching out just for me badly, because I'm working with an artist who's under a deadline and getting a page rate, and the last thing the artist needs is to get a script that's not drawable, which is wasting his time.
Yes, absolutely.
So early on, I do what every writer does, is say, here's a 38 panel page and it's a crowd scene and everything, and it just doesn't, it's the only way to do it is to do it badly, honestly. You just do it badly for a while until you start to figure out, and a lot of it is making sure that you've drawn in room for your balloons and making sure you and do it yourself a little bit, and then in my case then pass it on. But it's definitely an extra step to it.
I had a class in college majoring in comic books, and the professor had us said, okay, everybody write a script about the tortoise and the hare. Write a however many page script. And then he had us all trade scripts with somebody else in the room and then draw it. And I was like, motherfucker, you made a goddamn car race, NASCAR race, and it's the bunny waves to the stadium crowd going to goddamn kill you. And so, as the writer, he said, whether you're the writer or the artist, you have to try the other side, draw what you're writing.
Yep.
Yeah, to see how it feels.
Yep. Question here?
Yeah. Do you feel like there's, I know it's hard, but do you feel like there's more of a trend for your audience to donate or give you more money directly? I know a lot of artists I follow on Instagram have jumped on board to Patreon, and it seems like all the comments and a lot of the followers are more than happy to join and start donating directly as opposed to selling ad space.
I'd say not only is it a trend, the audience demands to give you their money directly.
A percentage. Okay, let's talk about the percentage. Let's talk about the I hate this term, true fan.
Yeah.
Because I consider myself a big fan of a lot of stuff that I really don't give any money to.
Yeah.
If I see them at a convention, I'll buy their book. But the phenomenon of Patreon is ridiculous. But I think I did the math with somebody about the percentage of the readers that you have and the percentage of who actually buys something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really depressing.
There's about 1 in 100.
But that's why. But that wouldn't change.
100? Nope, 100. Go you.
maybe 1 in 200.
Because I do a I've got a sale in my store, and I'll make maybe 2 or 3 sales that week. Mm-hmm. And I have a daily comic. I don't even know how many. I get maybe more than 50,000 people a day.
Sure.
But those numbers wouldn't necessarily change if it was a book in a store or a web strip online or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like the drop off between people who will casually check something out and people who will put money down for it hasn't really changed in all of the eras of comics that have been produced. But what has changed is that there is more of a perception amongst the audience now that if I buy from Amazon, if I buy from my local comic shop, if I pre-order through Diamond or something, I'm cutting the creator out and they're not getting their full share. So I'm not going to do those things. We hear all the time when we tried to solicit the third volume of our book through Diamond, the print copy, people would always say, oh, pre-orders are out, that's great. When can I get it right from you? Because I want to make sure you get all the money. And on the one hand, we really appreciate that. It's great that they want to support us so much. On the other hand, they're so interested in making sure we get the money that they won't do the things that make sure we get the money.
Right.
So we've stopped doing Diamond because nobody will pre-order anymore. They want to go directly through us. Like, we were like, pre-order's up. And they're like, great, when's the Kickstarter? What? Yeah, the audience demands it. They want to go right to you. The people who are willing to spend money are the ones they want to have a more direct
But how many
connection.
Readers do you have to get before you get a patron?
I think you have to have probably at least like 1,000 people who are definitely like always reading all the time. And you know, sometimes
so 1,000 baseline.
I would say if you're regularly it's late on Friday. If you're regularly getting like 1,000 readers on any given chapter, if you're regularly making 500 to 800 impressions, so 500 to 800 likes on any given thing that you post, then you're definitely ready for Patreon.
But you can start it at any time, and that's fine.
Sure. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a Patreon that only has like 10 people supporting it. There's
hey,
room
money
to grow.
Is money, man.
Hey, it's fine. Yeah. You've got exactly. Four. You know what? Most people got nothing. Yeah. So you're 400% over.
Like, yeah. So, like, your Patreon, too, like, you know, you don't just do it online. You can also go to conventions. Like, this weekend, we're like, if you sign up for our Patreon, you're going to get this and this
we'll
and
give
this
you
and
this,
this
stuff at the
right
show.
At the show to get more people onto that Patreon. Like, that's the thing that we're having to push just because that's where the market is now. Where we'll be in 5 years, I don't know.
But the majority of the patrons I'm finding just want to support you.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, what do you want? Yeah. Crickets. Yeah. Like, hey, do you want this? Do you want this? I'm putting all this work into all of this stuff, and they don't care.
Yeah.
They
I mean, it's nice, but it's a little... I'm like, this is weird. Sorry, there's a question in the back.
So this was briefly touched on indirectly earlier, but are there any particular challenges that get faced when the pace of a particular comic really has a huge mismatch with the pace of real life? So with weekly or every 2 week updates, I've seen some comics go, like the plot will progress about 3 days over the course of 3 years. Are there any
so it depends on the story.
I mean, those South Park kids have been in elementary school for the last 20 years.
If you're going to start a comic or a webcomic or whatever, get a buffer before you start, and then and figure out a way to cut corners to get it done. On Saturday and Sundays, I do a What Not Say in the Bedroom, which is a black panel and a word balloon. And it's stuff like, uh-oh, or you got the key, right? And so it's ways to do filler. At one point I was hungover and couldn't get the comic done, so I did a Sharpie drawing on the back of a letter that said, I'm drunk, and I posted that and people loved it. Why am I? And so in psychology class in high school, they did an experiment on slot machines and how many times somebody will pull it and not get a reward, and how many times they'll pull it and get a reward, but if when do they walk away? And it's that how many updates can you miss before people start walking away? And that's, you know, one. That, I mean, if you're amazing, they'll wait for you. Every time my husband tries to compare me to, who's the goats with the guy that he just posts whenever he feels like it, and it's brilliant. I'm like, honey, that's, I'm not him. And so it's the concept that you've gotta, you know, you can't miss an update. If you say you're gonna post once a month or once a week, you have to do that, whether it's a drunken scribble or not. And it's the meeting the deadlines. It's, I had the realization that school doesn't teach you shit except meeting the deadlines. And in real life, if you miss those deadlines, your electricity gets cut off. So the repercussions are a little bit bigger. So if in comics, even though you're not getting paid early on, you know, if you're doing a webcomic, you're not getting paid at all, but it's teaching you to get those deadlines. It's teaching you that you're meeting those deadlines. And from that, you could go and say, hey, I want to draw your book. I've been posting this comic regularly for 3 years. Oh, okay, that brings you some cred.
You were asking about pacing, and I think the most important thing is just that something meaningful happens in every installment. If something is happening of value, the story's moving forward, the characters are learning something. If it's a comedy, there's a good gag every episode. As long as that happens, you can spend 5 years on the same 3 days and nobody cares because every time I read it, I'm rewarded with something. That's all that matters. When people get bored when they feel like nothing's happening. The manga Berserk has this problem. It takes forever to come out, and then when it does come out, nothing happens. Like, what were we waiting for? Nothing.
And you can do that in manga. If it's a book that comes out, they can spend a chapter on standing and looking at each other during before the fight scene.
Sure, because there's fight scene more chapters in that book.
Yeah.
But if all I got is this installment,
if it's
going to be another week before another one, there's nothing to hook me in and keep me coming back.
So you save some of those for the print book. You can be like, we're building up, and like we're only going to do like every other page, and then we'll post it in the print book. Yeah. But for the online updates, you got to get to a point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talking about pacing, Scott McCloud in Understanding Comics talked eloquently about telescoping time, that you can have a panel that takes place 1 second after the previous panel, or 1,000 years. It all depends on what the story demands.
My husband's making me watch Battlestar Galactica for the first time. It's great. I know. And they have this one where they zoom in on the president when his head's on the table. They zoom in on his head and then they zoom out. No. And it's a year later.
Oh,
and I'm like, this is a dream sequence, right? And so it's this beautiful just like illustration of change of time.
Yeah.
And just
it's about to get so hard.
No, I did. Oh, we did right before we showed up. And I'm just like, could we watch like Shazam or something? Because they're going to be sad for the next ever.
If you take nothing else away from this panel, watch Battlestar Galactica. It's so good.
God. Sarah Scribbles did a comic about finding a fan thing for the first time that's years old, and she runs into the room that's the fan room with the party, and she's like, let's party. Oh, nobody's here.
Empty room.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's so say we all. I get that now.
All right, now.
Playing off the last question, how much buffer do you individually have? I heard a rumor that some crazy people have like a year worth of buffer saved up.
2 months.
2 months?
We have been trying to everybody to get a year. Yeah, I think so.
It depends on what I know is going to happen in life. Uh-huh. If I know I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks, it takes me 2 months to get ready for Dragon Con, the buffer, that every day, because I have to write a reusable comic, 2 usable comics a day, that's not gonna happen. I have to write 6 comics to get, you know, a usable one. So it takes me 2 months of getting the Dragon Con buffer ready. And then that's also getting 2 days after the con ready because I'm gonna need to sleep. But yeah,
We honestly putting our stuff onto Webtoon, like we had all of season one for Uniques done and then started putting it on Webtoon. And again, like I said earlier, I would, if we ever start releasing it again, I would have reformatted, I would have added in all those like single face shots and stuff like that to space it out. So when we get to season two, luckily we have Uniques Tales to buffer in between season one and two, but you need to put out less content, but make it feel
less
like
content
more
often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ways to cut corners.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the answer is you want as big a buffer as you can get. Because life will drop stuff on you. You'll run into problems. Even if everything is working perfectly and you've got all the time in the world to get your comic made, you hit that one script that is just a son of a gun and you cannot break the story. And it just takes longer than it should. It's going to happen. So the bigger a buffer you can get yourself, the better off and happier you're going to be.
And that holds, I think, equally true for both webcomics and for physical comics.
Yeah.
I mean, the buffer has to be huge. You can be, there's certain A-listers where you can miss a couple months on a physical book and it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a normal book, you get to issue 3, you miss issue 4 for a month, you're done.
You're done.
And that's, you know, good fast. Or, you know, or a nice person.
Right.
Yeah.
You can be an asshole and fast and good, but if you're an asshole and bad and, you know, it's this concept that yeah, they're going to keep reading it if it's good. You know, you can miss buffers, you can delay as long as the comic is great. Yeah. That's few.
But it has to be pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, but you don't want to break the spell by missing a day because, you know, we cast a spell on the audience by regular updates. And they expect it, and they come back for it. And if it's not there, then the spell's broken.
That's a learned behavior, right? Once you unlearn that behavior, it's less.
It's like trying to train cats.
Yeah.
They're creatures of habit. The first day you don't follow the habit, they have forgotten everything you've tried to teach them.
My brother turned to me one day, and he was like, you know, I don't really like your comic. I don't identify with it. It doesn't. I was like, no, it doesn't. It's, you know, it's a very niche. You know, he's like, I don't really understand it. I don't think it's funny. I don't follow. You know, I don't identify with it. A year later, he comes back and he goes, you know, I still read your comic every day, even though I don't like it, because it posts there's something different every day.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, check it out.
And so I just go and check it anyway, even though I don't like it. Yeah. It's just it's something that. Yeah, no, he's the other one is at Burning Man with fire-breathing dragons, and I'm the boring one of the family. Anyway.
Well, and that's where the I'm drunk note comes back, because if you've got nothing from the comic to post something else.
Yeah.
There's always something there.
I was really sick one day when we were putting Rainbow in the Dark up on Webtoon, and we're like, I know we said we'd do this big Q&A thing, but it ain't happening.
We just did a cute...
Because we sick.
We did a quick, cute little chibi drawing of me taking care of a terribly sick little comfy.
And I had the swirly eyes and everything.
And it got tons of likes, and people went nuts for it.
Goddamn, I hate it. No, the little doodle thing that you do as filler just takes off.
They love it.
The filler of the Saturday comics of What Not Say in the Bedroom, which is a blank panel with a word balloon on it. I have a template for the goddamn thing. And people were like, those are my favorite. You should do a book of those.
It's so much better when you don't draw.
So I was about, just turn the lights off. You're so much more attractive. You're funnier in the dark.
Yeah, right.
And so I was like, fine, Amazon has this print on demand thing. What's the cheapest, most standard size, 4x6, sure, I'll do a comic book that's 4x6. Yeah. And 60 pages is the smallest, sure, I'll do $1.60, I will make a book of What Not to Say in the Bed. It still sells. It sells. I have an entire book of What Not to Say, and people are like, first timers are like, this is hilarious. I'm like, fuck you.
You know,
yeah, that filler. Sometimes that filler takes.
Yeah.
Here's another thing.
Bathroom books. You can stop
anytime. Isn't that just creators for you? Right. Like the easiest money you've ever made is the most frustrating sale you ever make.
Right. Now here's another thing just to keep in mind too. That's like galling on social media, is that sometimes like the more you're posting and stuff like that, and the longer people have been reading a series, the less likes they'll give because they just forget.
You will see it.
Like you said, keep getting more people, but they're doing less likes.
Yeah.
And you're like, everything's based on likes, so you have to start reminding, like, we have more people reading uniques than ever.
Push that subscribe button.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's annoying,
but then fewer people liking stuff because people just forget and they have to be reminded, like, right, I have to do the thing, I have to click the button, because everything is based off of these silly little things
arbitrary
that you just don't
metrics
think about.
It should go off of red pages.
It doesn't, though. Tears.
Yeah.
So I think that's it.
Any more questions?
So do we want to say where we are physically this weekend?
Yes. So Jenny, where is you?
So yeah, I have a enormous table with all of the books and the What Not Say in the Bedroom book, if you want to come and pick that up. It's in the Digital Comic Artist Alley, which is in the America's Mart, Building 2, Floor 4, Aisle 500. Once you go through all of the vendors' floors, which apparently there's three of them,
just
keep going. There's
more.
You can
go. You can take the escalator all the way to the top.
Yeah.
So, and we are also in Comics and Pop Art Alley, which is on the fourth floor. And we are at table
622. Right on the corner of the 600.
All the things, all the pretty stuff. You'll see lots of big posters. middle one is us being adorable. And all of our characters are coming from our drawing board. Aww.
We suck.
Yeah.
So this is sort of off-brand then, but I'm tomorrow will be at the Hyatt at 4 o'clock in the Spring Room with my new book, which is physical, though, about a world where all humans are gone and the animals are trying to pick up the pieces, and I'll be doing a signing and a panel there on that book.
And if you find Adam and Comfort, you will find me, because I'm the table right next to them. table 624.
We try to make it easy.
Yeah. Oh, and it says, please remind the audience to rate us in the DragonCon app.
Open up your apps.
Remember to do
open
that.
Up your apps. Go to your little star thingy. Yeah. Star it. Oh, this is working. This is great.
So that this is an example of exactly what I was talking about. Because, again, everybody needs everything
based
on the likes and the numbers and all that kind of stuff. Like, we even have, like, there was somebody who wanted to interview us for being local comic creators in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
It was a podunk little magazine in Little Grand Rapids, and they wanted to do a feature on us because we're local comic creators. And then they were like, okay, so how many followers do you have on social media? What are your Instagram numbers? What are your Facebook numbers? How many likes does your page have? And we're like, whatever, I guess, here are your statistics. And they're like, we were really aiming for somebody bigger.
We really would like to have somebody with 50,000 followers. And I was like, what do you think you're going to get, man? So everybody needs, like, honestly, even this is the other, like, we're in a weird situation right now because nobody knows what to exactly do with social media, and it's being monetized, but it's all like a squishy area. And so, like, even with comic publishers, a lot of times that they're looking at things like, oh, we can't have this artist because they don't have these many likes or followers or whatever, because they're not using the skill necessarily as a marker of if you can do the job. It's just who follows you. And that's unfortunately right now leading to a lot of, like, problems through the industry.
Which is a whole other panel.
It's a whole other thing.
See us later for industry problems and where they come from.
But that's the thing, is you guys don't get so caught up in that stuff, because...
Don't let yourself play that game.
Right. Like, you can be aware of it, but you cannot be ruled by it, because, again, the rules will change in probably the next 5 years.
As soon as you chase the algorithm, they change the algorithm.
Yeah. You're a fish, and you just keep on swimming, and you don't let anything stop you, and that's what's going to get you where you're going.
Do the work you like to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Persistence, perseverance.
You don't have any excuses. Go do it.
Yeah.
You don't have to get a publisher. You don't have to get a special Wacom tablet or anything. You can
draw
it on
anybody's
the back
permission.
Of a postcard. Take a picture with your phone and post it.
Yeah. You do it on a napkin.
Sock puppets. Yes. Photos of sock puppets. I want to make a sock puppet comic now.
The whole thing. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey.
Yay. Thank you.